You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. I've got this thing, and it's golden, and I'm not going to give it up for nothing. Those words, expletives deleted, are from Rod Blagojevich. They were captured by a federal wiretap. He was talking about his appointment of a successor to Barack Obama in the U.S. Senate. The allegation that Blagojevich was trying to sell the seat is only one of the charges against the former governor. Other charges include extorting campaign contributions from a children's hospital slated to get state money and a racetrack executive in exchange for signing a gambling bill. The then governor was arrested on a federal criminal complaint in December 2008. In January, he was impeached and removed from office. And in April, he and some of his closest aides and advisors were indicted on federal felony charges. On the program today, we'll look at the rise and fall of the former governor. Our guest is journalist Elizabeth Brackett. She is the author of Pay to Play, How Rod Blagojevich Turned Political Corruption into a National Sideshow. Listeners, I invite you to join our discussion. I look forward to your questions and comments. You can join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest, Elizabeth Brackett, is the recipient of a Peabody Award for her political coverage. She's also won four Emmy Awards. She's a longtime correspondent for the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer and the news host of Chicago Tonight, the flagship news program of Chicago Public Television Station WTTW. Pay to Play is published by Ivan R. D. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Elizabeth Brackett, good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure, sure. The indictment handed up in April charges that Rod Blagojevich was scheming to profit from his position even before he took office as governor. And this was a man who had grand political ambitions, including a run for the White House. What do these two things say about this guy?
Well, that is very important, these two things. One, that he, you know, won for governor, but two, that he really wanted to run for president. And that explains a lot about Rod Blagojevich. You know, when he was first elected in 2002, this was going to be the new era of reform. He'd ran a very successful campaign. He'd certainly raised a whole lot of money. He was an attractive populist candidate, the first Democrat to be governor of Illinois in a quarter century, replacing the disgraced Governor George Ryan. So there was a very attitude of optimism that this was going to be an era of reform for Illinois. Well, it didn't exactly turn out that way.
Yeah. This is something that I learned in Pay to Play, your book, that I had somehow missed or forgotten about. But apparently, back when he was in the state's attorney's office in Cook County as an assistant, he was a small-time bookmaker.
Well, that there is that story, yes.
Is it true?
You know, I don't absolutely know if it's true. It was done by Chuck Gowdy, a reporter at ABC 7 in Chicago. And I talked to Chuck about it, and he gave me the information, so I decided to include it. And I do say clearly in the book that this was his story. But it was pretty interesting. I mean, there are, you know, Chuck Gowdy, who's a very responsible investigative reporter, certainly thinks it's true. And it was well-sourced. So the story was that, you know, while he was being, as you said, an assistant state attorney on the south side of Chicago, he was, you know, bringing in extra cash by being a bookie.
Yeah, well,
interesting.
One of the things that this little story tells me about this guy is he's drawn to recklessness.
Well, you have to say that his behavior was unbelievably reckless, particularly near the end of his governorship when the Fed started taping his conversations, which he had an inkling about a month before his arrest. He did learn that one of his closest aides, John Wyma, who at one point had been his chief of staff, was cooperating with the feds. So you would think that he would be somewhat aware that perhaps, you know, he was under serious investigation, and that could include wiretaps. But the things that he discussed on those wiretaps that we've now all heard were just shocking. I mean, people could not believe why someone, number one, would just be that politically careless and reckless.
Yeah. Also, some of this information was beginning to bubble up before his run for re-election. But why didn't it really take hold?
It hadn't exactly bubbled up. It was right smack out there. You know? And it is surprising why people didn't pay more attention to it. Because, for instance, Tony Rezko, who is really at the center of much of the political corruption in the Blagojevich administration, was indicted about a month before Rod Blagojevich was reelected. He was indicted in October, and Blagojevich was reelected in November. So, and there was coverage of it. Sometimes in some of these discussions, people have said to me, well, what happened to the press? Why didn't we know about it? Mm. And I did talk to, in particular, Natasha Karecki, the Sun-Times reporter, who had covered all of the Rezko trial, for instance, the Rezko indictment and the trial. And she said, you know, I wrote 400 articles about this. But it was during the campaign mode, and people just weren't paying that much attention, partly because Rod Blagojevich had raised so much money in his reelection campaign. He had $249 million in his Friends for Blagojevich campaign fund, which is just astonishing. And he spent a whole lot of that on paid media, and the paid media, his television commercials, were really knocking anything else out. Judy Bartopinka, who ran against him for governor, told me that running against someone who had a $249 million campaign fund was like running against a tsunami. I mean, she just, you know, couldn't break through.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit about this machine that he had going to raise this money and who the contributors were and how this worked.
Well, that really was at the heart of the corruption. And as you said earlier, what we found out indictment, which was, I sort of knew this, but it was even surprising to me to find out that this had really been going on even when he was running for governor the first time. That's when they put this operation together. And basically, it was Christopher Kelly, who I was just in the courtroom the other day when Christopher Kelly was handed a sentence of 37 months for not for his association with Blagojevich. That he was also indicted for that, and that will come up again in probably next year when Blagojevich goes to trial. Christopher Kelly will again go to trial. But he was at the center of much of the fundraising operation along with Tony Rezko, Stuart Levine, and they put together an operation that really used the office of governor as a way to have people contribute money that wound up in his campaign fund. So, for instance, if you wanted a state job, if you wanted to have a seat on a state board, that was fine, and you were vetted by Tony Rezko, who has never had a position in the government at all. He was a private citizen doing all this. Then you probably needed to know that you had to make a campaign contribution of $25,000. That's what the seats were going for, was the word about town. The Tribune did a story at one point calling it the $25,000 Club, and they linked all the people who'd made $25,000 contributions to whether or not they'd gotten a position in state government, whether or not they'd gotten a contract. And the number was over 50%. So that was sort of the operation that they put together, that if you had to pay to play. If you wanted to play in state government, then you had to pay to get a spot.
Journalist Elizabeth Brackett is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of Pay to Play, How Rod Blagojevich Turned Political Corruption into a National Sideshow. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now. A listener waiting on line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. I have not had the chance yet to read your book, but I'm wondering if you dealt with a very early indicator of how sick and demented Blagojevich really is. Back when he was a member of the United States Congress, during the Serbian war of extermination against the Bosnians, Blagojevich, being Serbian-American and representing one of the largest Serbian-American communities in the country, went over to the Bosnian Serb headquarters, Pale, while Sarajevo was being destroyed, and met with Radovan Karadzic, whom the United States government even at that time had said was responsible for committing war crimes and crimes against humanity against the Bosnians. And today, Karadzic is now on trial before the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity against the Bosnians. And Blagojevich over there, on behalf of the Serbian-American community, offered his support and encouragement to Karadzic. And Karadzic's extermination, literally of close to 100,000 Bosnians, the mass rape of 20,000 women. Basically, Blagojevich should be on trial in The Hague with his good friend Karadzic for aiding and abetting genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity. And in my opinion, I'm glad the feds finally got him. But this is sort of like Al Capone being indicted for tax evasion, as opposed to murder and racketeering and things of that nature. I'm wondering if you dealt with any of these issues in your book. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Rob Blagojevich has a lot of problems, but I'm not sure I would say that he needs to be indicted for war crimes. I did cover that in my book, and he went over there actually with the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who was on a mission to free three American soldiers who'd been held captive by the Serbs. And so it was really a mercy mission. It was a church-based organizations led by Reverend Jackson that went over there. And then Congressman Blagojevich volunteered to go with them because he spoke Serbian and because he had some contacts over there with the administration, as you say. And they were successful, and they did free the three American soldiers who'd been held captive and brought them home. So that was the basic purpose of the mission. The Serbian community here was angry about his trip over there, because for one thing, when the vote came in the United States Congress on whether or not to end the bombing in Serbia, he voted against it. And that really angered the Serbian community. So when he came back from his trip, he was not, he didn't get the kind of support from the Serbian community that one might expect.
Let's take another call, a listener on line two. Good afternoon.
Hello. A very interesting topic. Looking forward to the read. My question, listening to the tapes and listening to his wife, it seemed like she has a very strong personality. What influence did she have on her husband in him engaging in some of these acts?
Well, that's kind of a hard question to answer. Rob Blagojevich was brought into politics by Patty Mell's father, his father-in-law, Richard Mell, who's a longtime alderman here in the city of Chicago. And he initially was also a ward committeeman, and needed a candidate to run for the Illinois State Legislature, and turned to his son-in-law, and that's how Rod Blagojevich first got into politics. Then supported him strongly with his ward organization when he ran for Congress. So certainly the family has been very influential in Rod Blagojevich's career. But then when he became governor, Blagojevich, in essence, dumped his father-in-law. And it caused just a really very tragic split in the family between Patty, and who was in the terrible position of having to choose between her father and her husband, and basically chose her husband. There was a serious break in the family. They didn't speak for almost 3 years. So sure, certainly she had an influence on Rod Blagojevich, but I think that he, in his own ambitions and his own desires to become governor and to become president, I don't think she was the motivation behind that.
The listener want to follow up?
Well, she just seemed to be a little arrogant to me, and I think I'm driven to that conclusion by the fact that she came from a powerful political background, being her father, and sometimes that can have an influence on you. I appreciate your comment.
Thank you. You know, interestingly enough, Patty never really liked politics growing up, the son of a prominent politician in Chicago. And I don't think she was particularly pleased when her husband decided to get into politics.
Hmm. She's remained fiercely loyal to him.
She has.
What have you learned about...
Eating tarantulas, as we've all seen. And I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Now that's loyalty.
Boy, more of the sideshow. What have you learned about her personality, about her character?
Patty Blagojevich is a strong character. She comes from a strong family that was really a very, very close family. Interestingly enough, her mother was always a little unsure of her son-in-law, Rod Blagojevich. She told her husband that she didn't want him to support their son-in-law for either for state representative or for Congress or even for governor. And she was worried about him. She said she just didn't quite trust him. But the family remained very close. Then, tragically, while all this was going on, she got a horrible brain disease, a debilitating brain disease, and passed away during Rod's second term. And at that point, there was some reconciliation with Patty and her father, but it didn't really last very long. Mm-hmm. And then finally, on the day that that Rod Blagojevich was arrested, she did call her father, and again there was some reconciliation. But he still has not spoken to his son-in-law.
What did Dick Mell see in Rod Blagojevich?
Well, initially he saw, he was a very attractive candidate. We all say he's a terrific retail politician. You know, he knows how to work a room. He walks into a room. He sort of captures the room. He looks everybody in the eye, shakes their hands, he remembers their names. And he initially, seemed to love it, getting out there on the campaign trail and talking to the people. He didn't much like governing, it turned out, but he liked politicking in the beginning. And initially, Dick Mell really didn't know what kind of a candidate he would be. He just needed someone to run for state representative. I always thought it was interesting the way he put it. He needed a candidate. It's not that the people needed a state representative. He needed a candidate. But anyway, he chose his son-in-law, and he turned out to be a much better candidate than he'd ever dreamed.
Mm-hmm. One more question, and then I've got a couple of callers here who would like to talk with you. The son-in-law, it appears, didn't pay attention to how Mel had built his career and his organization. Why not?
You know, that's a good question. I think he was too ambitious, but also, strangely, Rod Blagojevich really didn't like to work very hard, or he liked to work at his own style, I think you could say. Now, for instance, if you want to run for president, what most people do is go around the country and build organizations, build contacts, build relationships with other politicians, other political organizations. Go to a lot of rubber chicken dinners and begin to put a national organization together and put a national fundraising organization together. Well, Rod Blagojevich had no interest in going around the country to build relationships. He didn't build any political relationships in Illinois. Why would he do it in any other part of the country? But he did think that the way to do this was to set up a national fundraising operation. And that's what he put all his energies into, and that's what wound up getting him into a lot of trouble.
Let's take some more calls now. Next, we go to a listener on line one in Charleston. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, at the beginning of the segment, you were kind of pondering why he'd become so brazen and even careless with his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that his behavior is not too far astray from how our government operates normally, I would think. And my example is, you know, our vice president and his relation to Halliburton, how much they overcharged us, and that was under investigation, and it seems like we just dropped it. So my question is, I guess, what's the real difference other than he had upfront asked for a specific amount? But is there any real fundamental difference between the way he collected his money, you know, that kind of pay for, or, you know, you pay to play? I guess I just don't see a big fundamental difference. And then my follow-up question would be, after all of our bad politics here in Illinois, I think we've had 3 governors maybe in the last 50 years go to jail. What is holding up campaign reform either in our state or nationally? Thank you.
Both of those are very good questions. I liked what Patrick Fitzgerald, the United States Attorney, said at the time of the arrest, actually. He said this was like pay-to-play on steroids. Yes, other people have engaged in, other politicians have engaged in pay-to-play in Illinois. It's unfortunately a long tradition. But this was just way over the top. You know, part of it was the lax campaign finance laws in the state. It wasn't illegal for anybody to give him $25,000 as a campaign contribution or $100,000 as a campaign contribution. What was illegal about it is if that was tied to getting a seat on a board or getting a state job or getting a state contract. That is illegal. And I really, when you look at the case against George Ryan, for instance, I mean, there was a vast world of difference in what George Ryan was convicted of and went to jail for and what Rob Blagojevich was asking in some of these conversations. And the question of, you know, what's wrong with Illinois, why can't we get some campaign finance reform and ethics reform laws passed is, you know, you have to look at what the state legislature did in this session. They did pass some watered-down kind of campaign finance reform after the commission that was put together at then Governor Quinn's request to ask them to put this reform commission together, headed by Patrick Collins, who was the prosecutor in the George Ryan case. And they came up with really some excellent recommendations and suggestions and hoping that would be translated into legislation. And some of it was passed, but it's pretty weak. So, you know, maybe the citizens of Illinois just aren't putting enough pressure on their legislators to say that we're enough. The legislators don't seem to be getting that message.
Let's take another call. A listener on line 2. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Is there any truth to the rumor that the reason why the recently departed governor did not spend his nights in Springfield was due to the fact that, this is the rumor I heard, is he had fathered a child out of wedlock with someone in the Springfield area, and Mrs. Blagojevich wouldn't let him stay down there, and she apparently refused to live in Springfield for some reason or another. And what can you say about that, if anything, if there's any truth to it, and so forth? Thank you.
I've heard that rumor. I haven't found anything to back it up at all. She didn't want to go to Springfield because they, as you know, they have 2 young daughters, and she wanted to raise them in the Chicago neighborhood, almost where she had grown up, and she liked the school they were in, and she just simply didn't want to move her young children to Springfield. And that angered, as you know, a lot of people, particularly downstate, because they thought it was just disrespectful of the whole governor's office. But I have no information that the rumor explanation is true.
Let's take another call. A listener on line 4. Hello. Line 4?
Yeah, good afternoon. You know, there's a lot of discontent in this state. You know, you can hear it from all the callers. And I laugh at it because, to be honest with you, we keep voting as I think it's the majority of the problems in this state is caused by us because we keep voting them in. Am I not correct?
Well, they are there by the vote, by the vote, choice of the voters. So you have to, the voters have to take some responsibility for who they elect to office.
I don't understand why we seem to be so stupid. We have the knowledge and the wherewithal to read up on these guys, or, you know, whether it be male or female, and find out exactly where they stand and what kind of policies or shenanigans going on. Because I'll give you a classic example. We voted in a president who really, when he was in this his office here in the state of Illinois, did absolutely nothing. He either abstained or wasn't around, you know, abstained for votes, or did try to avoid voting on anything. I mean, I can't come up with any reason why this guy was even in office in the first place. I mean, my knowledge of politics seems like it's far better than his. Now, I'm not knocking him one way or the other. I'm just saying it's a fact. The information that's out there for all of us to read, to understand, we don't seem to want to do it. It's a lack of knowledge on our part. Are we that stupid? Because we go and we tell people in other countries how to do it. We're always complaining like this thing in Iran now. Everybody's up in arms about that. Why is that? But yet we seem to want to pay more attention to people in other countries than this country. And it confuses me because I didn't know.
Is there a question in there someplace?
Yeah. I guess we seem to know better, but we don't do better, I guess, is the caller's comment.
Very good.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line 3. Good afternoon.
Hello. From Urbana. Line 3. Okay. I want to correct one of the earlier callers who is all indignant and enraged about Blagojevich going to Yugoslavia and consorting with war criminals. He went to Yugoslavia to see if he could rescue those 3 American servicemen who had been captured by the Serbs. He did not talk to Karadzic, he talked to Milosevic. And in this particular case, his aptitude for conning and tricking people paid off, because he told Milosevic that he would do all kinds of stuff. Oh, yes, he would represent his causes. Yes, he would get all kinds of favored nation agreements for Serbia, and he would reduce or abolish all the restrictions on trade, and he would make the name of Serbia and Milosevic much, much more popular, and Milosevic was the leader of independent Serbia, and all he wanted was Serbia to be free. And if he released those prisoners, Blagojevich would do all this stuff for him. And, of course, after the prisoners were released, if you get in touch with them, they'll tell you how grateful they are. I mean, one of them was being tortured by sleep deprivation. The other one was being made to lie on the floor in cramped positions. And whenever he tried to shift his position, the guard would stomp on him. So it's outrageous that Blagojevich has done a lot of crooked and outrageous things. Somebody said he's been into everybody's pocket. I'm so poor, he hasn't been able to rob me, possibly because I have very little to steal. But on the other hand, this is one of, as far as I'm concerned, one of the good things Blagojevich has done in his life. And I really felt so indignant when I heard him being slammed for this and actually slandered. Yes, that's all I want to say. And I do know something of that area because I have a PhD in Eastern European and Russian studies.
Okay. Elizabeth Brackett, do you have anything to comment on there? On that comment?
I think that the caller is right. He didn't speak with Karadzic. He spoke with Milosevic. And I did have that in the book. And I do think we also have to acknowledge that it was Reverend Jesse Jackson that led that delegation and did a lot of the negotiating as well. Blagojevich was important in it because of his knowledge of Serbian and because of the contacts that he did have. Some of which had been built up from Chicago. Now, there's a fairly large Serbian population here in Chicago, and he certainly was a part of that community. His father was Serbian. They spoke, and he was held in a Nazi prisoner of war camp for 4 years after he was arrested in Serbia when he was part of the then called the Greater Yugoslavian Army in World War II. And it was after that he and his brother came to the United States. And they maintained their, you know, ties with the Serbian community. They only spoke Serbian at home. Every summer, Rad Blagojevic went to a Serbian summer camp. He was a member of the Serbian Orthodox Church. So they did maintain close ties. And I think the caller is right, that that was a the effort to free the three American servicemen was a valiant effort and a successful one.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Journalist Elizabeth Brackett is our guest this afternoon. She's the author of Pay to Play, How Rad Blagojevic Turned Political Corruption into a National Sideshow. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Join the discussion this afternoon with your questions and comments. Tell us a little bit more about his parents. He's often referred to them as hardworking, working class people.
Well, they certainly were exactly that. His, as I said, his father came over from Serbia, and he worked very hard, as did his mother. And there, as many immigrant parents are, their goals were to make sure that their children, their two boys, had the best education they could possibly have. They never owned a home. They lived in apartments on the northwest side of Chicago. He and his brother grew up in a five-room apartment. They shared the bedroom. His older brother, Robert, they were 15 months apart. They were very close. And I think they were infused with, the values of hard work and honesty. And you see that in Rad Blagojevic's politics, his public politics, to an extent, in that he was a very populist candidate. And he was always, many of his programs were directed at what he would call the little guy. Many of his health care reforms were directed towards people who, you know, were in need of health care reforms, for instance, which is much of the state, by the way. But strangely, that those immigrant values of hard work and honesty didn't seem to meld into his personal life. So there was a kind of a dichotomy there in Rad Blagojevic, his public life and his personal life, because, as I said, there are questions about his honesty, and this lack of desire to work as hard as he needed to get the job done was very strange. I mean, not only did he not go to Springfield, and partially, again, that was because Patty didn't want to move the girls down there, but he didn't go to work in Chicago either. He just didn't like to go into the office. He basically ran the state from his living room on his speakerphone, which was pretty interesting to find out. His press secretary said to me, well, you know, it's not like he was out playing golf. I mean, he was paying attention. He would call in, you know, six or seven times a day and speak with his top staff. But he just didn't like to leave his house and come to work.
Hmm. One of the family's heroes was Richard Nixon. And as a young man, Rad Blagojevic thought well of Richard Nixon. And you tell the story in the book of Rad Blagojevic getting Nixon's autograph in 1980 in New York City.
Yes, that was quite something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, now, you have to remember that Rad A. Blagojevic, his father, was a staunch Republican, as many Serbians were, because they were very angry at what had happened at Yalta with Truman and Roosevelt giving away their country, Yugoslavia, when it went behind the Iron Curtain. So, and also, Rade Blagojevich's prisoner of war camp had been rescued. He was rescued by General Dwight D. Eisenhower. So he was a very staunch Republican and grateful to the Republicans. And that led to this sort of fascination with Richard Nixon. Now, his mother, who was first generation, was a solid Chicago Democrat. So their dinner table conversations were interesting, it was said.
I'm sure.
But after he graduated from high school, and I think it was college, he and one of his best friends went to New York on a trip, and one of the things they did was they read in a local magazine about New York. They found out where Richard Nixon lived and
there was some small item in this magazine that said he went for a daily walk. So they got themselves together and went over there, and out of his townhouse came Richard Nixon. And there's a great picture that I have of Rob Blagojevich in his running shorts and Nixon in his proper suit signing an autograph. It's a very interesting little photograph.
Also, another little piece of trivia here. One of the reasons Blagojevich picked Pepperdine for law school was that Nixon had roots in Malibu.
Right. And another reason was he got in.
Yes, that's also critical.
He didn't at Northwestern,
yeah,
he'd wanted to do.
Right. Well, when he returns to Chicago from Pepperdine, he goes to work first for Ed Radoliak for a while, then for Richard M. Daley, who was at that time state's attorney. What did he learn in these two positions? What was going on at the time?
You know, he did work for Ed Radoliak, and this was also at the time, partially at the time of council wars.
Mm-hmm.
When Harold Washington was mayor, and he really got into the side of politics, the organization, Democratic organization politics is what he figured if he ever wanted to get into politics, this is what he was going to have to get involved in, and kind of left his Republican family history and went over to the Democratic side. He also... wound up after he worked in the state's attorney's office, he left and set up a storefront law office, and where his mother was his secretary, who was forever getting on him for never showing up on time, which was a habit that lasted his entire lifetime. And having gone to many of his press conferences where we were, you know, waited a good, at least an hour on almost every press conference, that was a habit he couldn't seem to break. And that was at the point when he had opened the storefront law office that he went to a fundraiser for Richard Mell, and that's where he met Patty Blagojevich, and life changed.
1988.
Great.
At the news conference in December of 2008, U.S. Attorney Fitzgerald said, "Governor Blagojevich has taken us to a truly new low." And one of the allegations against Blagojevich, he put Barack Obama's Senate seat up for sale. Then he finds Roland Burris to take the job. He appoints him. Do you think as a result of all of this there will be a change in how successor senators are selected?
Well, there was an opportunity for a change to take place. Mm-hmm. The legislature could have said, from now on, pass legislation to say that there should be a special election. But they didn't, and I don't see an indication that they're going to, strangely enough, because it's not, to the party in power's advantage to do that. So you would think there would be, but my prediction is that things may not change much.
Yeah. In the second chapter of your book titled A Tradition of Corruption, you say we've had a long love-hate relationship with the state's reputation for producing scoundrels and scallywags. Talk with us just a little bit about what's at the root of this.
Well, I think there is a love-hate relationship. You know, we sort of like our scoundrels. I mean, even Chicago sort of likes the history of Al Capone. We sort of like the history of Paul Powell with all his, when he was Secretary of State and was found with thousands and thousands of dollars in his shoeboxes. It turned out when you wrote a check to the Secretary of State for your driver's license, he said, just make it out to Paul Powell. Well, it really went to Paul Powell.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this history of to be successful in politics, you have to build a large machine, and to make that machine work, you have to, raise a lot of money. And initially, with large immigrant populations in states like Illinois, New York, where large political operations got started, there's a tradition of patronage, which at that point was thought of as good politics. And now we think of it, there were just indictments in Chicago, or convictions in Chicago, for patronage politics, which many of the Chicago politicians still can't quite understand what they did wrong. It was the way we've always done it. So there's a mindset in Illinois that this is the way we've always done it. This is the only way politics will work. I couldn't become the governor, or I couldn't run for president unless I raised a whole lot of money. I'm not going to be able to raise a whole lot of money unless I have something to offer, which is a state contract or a state job. Otherwise, why would people contribute to me? There's just not enough history of people are going to contribute to me because they think I would make a fine elected official. Mm-hmm. So we haven't seemed to be able to break out of that way of thinking.
Yeah. Rod Blagojevich, you've called him a couple of times during the interview a populist, and we've had other populists in the governor's mansion, Dan Walker. Mm-hmm. Now we have Pat Quinn, also a populist. What are the challenges to populists in Illinois who love politics, but how do they come to the table and begin to govern? What are the challenges for them?
Well, I think they certainly can. We'll see how Pat Quinn does. But it's fine to be a populist, but you also have to be able to establish relationships, you know, with the legislature, if you're the governor, for instance. And now, admittedly, Rod Blagojevich had a very difficult time because he had Michael Madigan as the Speaker of the Illinois House, who was not about to give up an inch of his power to this new governor. If Rod Blagojevich had had a bit more skill or had a bit more interest in establishing a working relationship with Michael Madigan, I think it could have been done in somewhat successfully. I mean, Madigan is a tough nut to crack. There's no doubt about that. But Blagojevich just went the other way and immediately formed a non-working, competitive, combative relationship with Michael Madigan, which basically brought the state to a halt. I think certainly for a populist politician, or you know, for any kind of a politician, you have to learn how to establish your relationships and your base in a manner that is going to allow you to get something done.
Yeah. One last question that I keep coming back to, sort of scratching my head over, and that is, back in December of 2003, the U.S. attorney at the time, Patrick Fitzgerald, still U.S. attorney, announced the indictment against George Ryan in Operation Safe Roads. How did Blagojevich and his friends react to that news? Did it give them pause? What were they thinking?
It didn't seem to, did it?
Yeah, no.
And that was, you know, it's a hard question to answer. Who knows? Rod Blagojevich has the best denial mechanism of anybody I've ever encountered. If he didn't want to believe it or listen to it or take it into consideration, he simply didn't. You would think. Now, I will say some of the people he surrounded him with then, Christopher Kelly, Tony Rezko, Stuart Levine, except for Stuart Levine, Kelly and Rezko had really not had a whole lot of political experience. You know, Kelly was a roofer that had great contacts and contracts at O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think if Dick Mell had been able to maintain, you know, a position of as an advisor or some influence, that things might have been a little different. Now, there's certainly been some questions about Dick Mell and his political career, but I think he had a better sense of where the line was. And I'm sure he was paying attention to what had happened to George Ryan. But the message just didn't seem to penetrate this group of people that Blagojevich had around him.
Yeah.
Or himself.
Yeah. Last question here, and we got to wrap up. What were your thoughts as you watched Blagojevich make the round of talk and entertainment shows?
Jeez. It was stunning. I thought, you know, what in the world is he doing?
How do you do that?
but then, you know, I talked to one interview I did was with his former press secretary, who said Rod Blagojevich, he thought the hardest thing for Rod Blagojevich when he was left office was going to be out of the limelight. He did have this, you know, insatiable need to be out in front of the, you know, of the camera, of the crowd, and which was so interesting because on the other hand, they couldn't get him out of his house to, you know, to come to the office. So there was this very strange two sides to this man. Mm. And I did ask a number of psychiatrists about his behavior. they were good enough psychiatrists, they weren't going to diagnose him since they hadn't seen him or treated him. But they did point me towards the definition of a narcissistic personality disorder, which is someone who craves attention, who needs the spotlight, who's very thin-skinned, and much of this is to cover up a low sense of self-esteem. And many people, his staffers, when hearing that, said they really thought that described him well, that he needed to be out there, but when it came to a real relationship, he just wasn't particularly capable of handling it, and felt that he kind of lacked the wherewithal to do what he needed to do.
There, we've got to wrap it up. Elizabeth Brackett, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Elizabeth Brackett is the author of Pay to Play, How Rod Blagojevich Turned Political Corruption into a National Sideshow. The book is published by Ivan R.D.